Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. I'm Phil Kitt from Elides, joined as ever by my good friend, Dr. Sid Lowe. Hello, Sydney.
Hi, Phil. How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you. Yeah.
Did you enjoy the Madrid derby?
You know what? I did. Quite a lot more than I thought I would. It felt like a proper derby. It felt like a really good occasion. It's the noisiest I think I've heard the Metropolitano, except maybe for the Arsenal game in the Europa League, going back, what's that, about 4 years now? Something like that. Obviously, that makes sense because, as some of our listeners will know, they've expanded the stadium to 70,000. It was basically full last night. There were a handful of people who had tickets but didn't go. But otherwise, it was packed and, you know, really, really good atmosphere. And Atletico played, I thought, really well brilliantly for the first 35 minutes, then very well again from the start of the second half, sort of on for about 20 minutes or so. And then I thought they contained Real Madrid really quite well. I thought it was a really deserved 3-1 win.
That was a little jibe at me, dear listener, because I had a ticket to the Madrid derby and I did not go. We won't go into the details of it, but I was not feeling the best.
No, that's so, entirely justified. I mean, it genuinely was about, I think, it's gone up to just over 70,000.
So there were 69,082 people there. I was not one of them, but I gave my ticket to someone else, so it was put to good news at least.
Oh, someone did go?
Yes.
Oh, good. Brilliant.
Listen, we'll get into discussions of that game and the other matches in just a second. I want to tell you that coming up this week for our patrons at patreon.com/TSFP, you've got a Q&A pod on Tuesday answering your questions, a bonus pod discussing the midweek round of matches in La Liga, plus you get Al's paper reviews, access to the TSFP Discord, and the first episode of our latest TSFP Presents series, More Super Seasons. So come and join us. It's around €4 a month and hopefully provides you with pretty good value. This is what happened on match day 6. We had a Basque derby on Friday night, which Athletic Club won 2-0 at the Estadio Mendizorroza against Alaves. Then on Saturday, the extraordinary form of Girona continues. The joint top, level on points with leaders Barcelona after a 5-3 victory against Mallorca. Some really excellent goals scored, and they're playing really well. Really, really well, Girona. Osasuna and Sevilla played out a 0-0 draw. Barcelona came from 2-0 down, scoring 3 goals in the last 9 minutes to beat Celta Vigo at 3-2 at Montjuic. And Almeria drew 2-2 with Valencia. Both goals scored for Almeria by on loan Sergio Arribas from Real Madrid. He's one of the top scorers in the division. Then on Sunday, Real Sociedad beat Getafe 4-3 in a hashtag unexpected partidazo at the Reale Arena. Take Kubo once again amongst the goal scorers and helping La Real to a victory. Rayo and Villarreal played a 1-1 draw. It was the same score between Betis and Cadiz. Las Palmas got their first win of the season and their first goal from open play, beating Granada 1-0. And then we had that Madrid derby with Atletico Madrid beating Real Madrid by 3-1. I don't actually think we mentioned that at the top of the programme. So there we go. That was the result of the Madrid derby. And let's get into the discussion of that fixture and that result then, Sydney. This was a game that Atletico couldn't really afford to lose. And we were discussing this in the sort of a preview to the game. If they had lost, I think it would have been 9 points between them and Real Madrid with a game in hand. No, it would have been 11, wouldn't it? With
11,
a game in hand,
11, yeah.
Not an insurmountable lead, but at this stage of the season, but certainly very, very difficult. The pressure was on them, particularly after the week that they'd had and the appalling performance they'd had in the previous league game against Valencia, then letting the Champions League victory slip to a 95th minute goalkeeper goal. So it hadn't been the best build-up. And then they produce a really, really strong performance. Certainly they started the game very, very well.
Yeah, I thought the start was exceptional. And Simeone after the game was quite interesting, actually, on that kind of background to this game. And he said, look, despite the way it ended, he said he felt that they played really well in Rome. He said, so there was, he didn't feel like that was problematic in terms of the way you approach this Real Madrid game. He then made the point that he thought that the Valencia game could happen. He said, look, I'm not justifying this. I think his words were, you know, sadly, it's a reality. This can happen because you have, of course, Atletico, who came off the back of not playing Sevilla because that game was cancelled because of the rain, or postponed rather because of the rain, and then having the international break. And he said, so you kind of have this really big break. And we mentioned the other day, was it 19 days?
I think it was 19 days.
Between games. And so Simeone, I mean, you do run the risk of it sounding like an excuse. And I think he was trying not to make it sound like an excuse. He was trying to make it sound like an explanation. But he said that can happen. So I wasn't as worried about it as I might normally be about a game like that. That said, as you say, they were under an enormous amount of pressure. Because while any lead is not definitive in September, 11 points is really quite significant. Even if they'd won the game in hand, you'd then say, OK, well, you win the game in hand, so it's 8. But 8 points, an 8-point lead against Real Madrid is not the kind of lead that you overcome. Not really. If you started a season and said, right, here's Atletico Madrid and Real Madrid, but we're going to give Real Madrid 8 points lead at the start of the season, you would never, at the start of that season, say Atletico Madrid will finish ahead of Real Madrid.
No.
Never. And so it was really, really important. I think it was emotionally pretty important as well, as you say, off the back of those two games. And the start reminded me a little bit of the way that Atletico used to do quite a lot in the Champions League, and I know it didn't pay off for them, but I remember them doing it in the game. They actually beat Real Madrid the last European game at the old Calderon when they had to come back from, I think it was 3-0 in the first leg, and they went into a 2-0 lead after about 20 minutes or so.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just that kind of relentless, right, we really go at them, and then if we get what we need, then maybe we try and protect it. Now, I didn't think that they tried to protect it this time, although there was a slight tilt in the game after they scored the second goal. So they're 2-0 up with a header from Morata and a header from Antoine Griezmann. And there was a slight tilt back towards Real Madrid and a little bit of Madrid having the ball. But I think the thing that really did it was Toni Kroos scoring a really Toni Kroos goal. And the first touch is brilliant and then he bends it so well into the bottom corner.
Yes.
And at that point, I think Atletico Madrid did think, oof, is this happening again? And I think they had to hang on a little bit between them and half-time.
And then Real Madrid had a goal disallowed just before half-time as well.
Yes, which I must admit, live, I didn't understand. And then, to be honest, when I've watched back the replay, I think it's the right decision. I'm always very dubious about any decisions that are offside because of a positional offside for a player that's not involved. But I think Rudiger is more than positionally offside in that he goes for the first cross. In fact, I think the first cross might be aimed at him, although it looks like it's a brilliant pass to the far post. And not only that, of course, but by going for the first cross and kind of grappling with the defender, and maybe there's an argument about whether there could be a penalty, actually, because they're both pulling at each other. He then lands on top of the defender and sits there on top of him. So the defender, I think it's Mario Hermoso, can't get up and respond. Anyway, that's kind of a bit too much time spent on that goal. The fact is it wasn't given. Then it's half-time, it's 2-1. And at that point, you think, I think Atletico Madrid get caught here. Real Madrid come back. And Simeone talked post-game, which I thought was interesting because it doesn't sound like Simeone for those people who are very critical of him. And he said, at half-time, we were saying, if we now make the mistake of trying to protect this, we will invite Real Madrid into the territory in which they will do us damage.
Hmm.
We have to go and take the game to them, even if it's not to score goals, to have the game further up the pitch. And I suppose that's easier to do when you're playing a Real Madrid side that doesn't have Vinicius. So that risk of the ball through the gap for someone exceedingly quick to run onto doesn't really exist.
Mm.
So you can take a step further up the pitch. And anyway, of course, what happened was they scored within 33 seconds of the second half. They get the 3-1. And at that point, you think, OK, great. I'll tell you, by the way, in the preview to this game, there was an interview that Memphis Depay did with ESPN. And
right.
He was asked, how do you stop Jude Bellingham catching you out in the 95th minute? And he said, by having a 2-goal lead. And there it was. That was the plan.
It's very simple. That's a very, very good response, that, from from old Memphis. Fantastic. Well done. And that's exactly what they did. Listen, I think we need to talk, obviously, we'll give credit to Atletico Madrid, and we've mentioned how they approach the game, and you've done something today, Sid, in your column, which we've been doing extensively on the podcast, but you've played amateur psychologist, and you've delved into the psychology of being Alvaro Morata. So I don't think we need to do that. Everybody go and check out Sid's column this week for The Guardian for more psychoanalysis on Alvaro Morata. What we should do is analyse a little bit Real Madrid and how they defended the game. Carlo Ancelotti called the three goals photocopies, carbon copies, I guess, and they were three balls in from the left-hand side and three headers. They defended extremely badly at times, Real Madrid. They just looked chaotic. There were so many gaps appearing where they really shouldn't be gaps in a well-drilled defence. It was a really poor defensive performance from Real Madrid.
It really was. And in a way, it's a good defensive performance, a good poor defensive performance for us to talk about, because I actually think, and you know, regular listeners know that I'm very, very uneasy about coming up with grand tactical conclusions for managers who clearly know a million times better than me.
Yes.
But I actually think watching this game, some of the tactical things were really quite clear and surprisingly so. Very briefly before we start that, the other thing, of course, is the recurring theme of the early goal.
Have you got it written down there? Because I've got it here.
I have now. Okay. I'm going to tell you it. Every single game since the first game of the season. So the first game of the season, they win 2-0 at Atletico Madrid. They then go to Almeria and they concede a goal to Arribas after 3 minutes.
Yep.
They go to Celta. Now, officially, they didn't concede the first goal, but they actually did concede the first goal after 2 minutes to Strand Larsen. They play Getafe and Mayoral scores after 11 minutes. They play Real Sociedad and Barrenechea scores after 5 minutes. They play Atletico Madrid and Morata scores after 4 minutes. Now, a couple of those is chance. All of those is not. All of those is there's something wrong. Now, that's the kind of maybe the, I don't know if it's a bit too cliched to talk about not starting with intensity, not being focused, not being in the game. But it certainly feels like there's a degree of that. What coaches tend to prefer to refer to as activisation rather than intensity. But yeah, that idea that you're really with it. And what Ancelotti has talked about in the past as being wanting defenders who are pessimistic.
Yes.
Who see the danger and are worried about it rather than thinking about other things. Now, let's deal with the structural stuff and the tactical stuff. And again, you know, let me stress that Ancelotti knows much more than me. But when it's really this clear, I think it's really, really startling. We've said, and actually in fairness, Ancelotti has said, right from the very start, including in pre-season, that one of the risks with the midfield diamond is it's very narrow. And you provide channels for the other team to run through. You make the wings quite wide, basically. You know, you make the wings a lot of space for them to run to. And in that scenario, your fullbacks need to be really good. Now, they need to be really good when you carry the game to the other team, because they need to be good attackers, but they also need to be good defenders. They need to be able to fill quite a lot of space. And we've seen, I think, that Fran Garcia is really good with the ball, but defensively has been a little bit exposed this season, particularly because he doesn't get very much support. That's the other thing, that space in front of him. It's all well and good us saying Fran Garcia doesn't defend well. Well, yeah, but if he's got two men running at him, and he had both Nahuel Molina and Llorente running at him, he's one man. And so you saw at the weekend at times, Toni Kroos was having to kind of nudge across the left, and that's really not the place where Toni Kroos wants to be honest. Then on the other side, I think we've seen a really good start to the season from Dani Carvajal, but he's injured, and it's Lucas Vazquez. Now, you could argue, maybe you should play someone else. Maybe Nacho should play there. Maybe Mendy should play on the left. But I think it's more systemic than that, and I think it is about that midfield. To add to that, this time around, of course, they didn't have a forward. They had Bellingham, theoretically, as the forward, because Joselu didn't play. It was a slightly strange
What did you make of that decision to leave Joselu on the bench and start Luka Modric instead?
I thought it was a strange one, and I understood why, and Ancelotti explained that he wanted more of the ball, and obviously on the face of it, a midfield that gets an extra man in it, and also has Modric and Kroos as two of those men, he's going to keep the ball well, on the face of it. It didn't really work, and I think one of the reasons it didn't work was, you tell me, from watching it on the telly, whether your view of it was clearer than mine, I wasn't sure where Modric was playing.
Yes. Top of the diamond, apparently.
Well, at times he seemed to be there, but he didn't seem to be there a lot of the time, to be honest. And I felt that we saw a slightly weird position from Toni Kroos, as I've already mentioned, that sort of that deep midfield role, he ended up being sort of slightly to the left quite a lot of the time, I think trying to bail out Fran Garcia a little bit. I actually thought Bellingham played pretty well and was trying to drive through, but he didn't have someone there, if you like, occupying the defenders for him. Now, one of the things that I was...
I heard the first dissenting voices on the radio this morning about Jude Bellingham. Oh, it's all very well about doing it against Getafe and Celta Vigo, but where was he last night, eh? Couldn't score in the first big game of the season, eh? Couldn't perform.
Well, I mean, let me answer that directly and then try and pose a couple of other questions to you. The direct answer to that is, well, yes, of course, because the game against Atletico Madrid, by definition, is harder. And if you're only going to define him by goals, there will be games this season when he doesn't score. That's going to happen. And I actually thought in a Madrid performance that wasn't particularly good, I thought he was a one player trying to drive at people. He was a one player trying to make things happen. In fact, he got taken down.
He always tries to make things happen.
He got taken down twice early on, which actually one of them wasn't given, and it indirectly leads to the Atletico goal. I mean, it's quite a lot of passes later, but indirectly leads to the Atletico goal. And I thought it was a foul on the edge of the area, so it's a free kick in a good position, and who knows what changes if that changes. But I don't want to ifs and ands it. It's more about analysing him. The first two fouls that were given were on him. As I say, the first two fouls that weren't given were also on him. I'm not sure if there was another one in the middle, but we're talking about at least four of at least, you know, at the most, the first five or six fouls were him. In the second half, I thought he was trying to get the thing moving. He was one of the few people trying to play incisive passes. I actually thought the best performer was possibly Brahim when he came on, in terms of actually trying to make things happen and succeeding in doing so. So I don't think it's about that. I also think it's about what's in front of him. And there's a couple of things here that I'm interested in, tactically. And again, I'm always nervous when we do the tactical thing. And that is, as we said earlier in the season, when the two forwards of Vinicius and Rodrigo, I think it works quite nicely for Bellingham because they split and he runs through the middle. And of course, when they split, they take defenders with them. If you're a central defender and you see Vinicius peel from the middle to the left or Rodrigo peel from the middle to the right, it takes a brave man to just say, I'll let him go. Or it takes a man who really trusts his fullbacks to say, I'll let him go, I'll pass him on. And not to be at least slightly pulled out, and therefore Bellingham goes through the middle. That's one thing.
Yes.
In other games, we've seen Bellingham play with Joselu. Now, I've actually thought at times that there's a problem there because Joselu doesn't vacate that space for Bellingham to go through. But what Joselu does do, of course, is occupy the defenders.
Fijar.
Exactly. Yeah. That lovely Spanish phrase of fixing the defenders. He holds them in a place, and Bellingham says, thanks very much. You keep those guys there. You know, it's almost like a couple of cops in a car park. You cover me and I'll go running across firing my gun. That's the most ridiculous analogy I've ever come up with. I've come up with some really shit ones over the years.
Yeah, it's up there.
Anyway, you know what I mean. It's the idea that, you know, you've got someone who occupies them and then you get on with it. And yesterday he didn't have that. And not only did he not have that, and we were saying this pre-game in our pre-game analysis with Luis Garcia for ESPN. You have this thing where Madrid don't have a forward at all and Atletico have three central defenders. And pre-game we're saying, so what do those defenders do? Do they step out to Bellingham when he's not at the top of the pitch because they think, well, we'd better go with him? Or do they say, actually, you know what, we'll wait here, we're fine. The risk, of course, with waiting here is if he gets up and running, he's on the run, on the move when he comes past you. But it was essentially three of them for one man.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Can I be a little bit vendajista here? And I don't know if I'm jumping on some kind of bandwagon because of last night's game. I don't think I am, though. I think this is a product of what we've seen in the last couple of weeks. But it does feel like this weekend there has been a big shift, in my opinion, of how potentially the league title could go. I don't know, it's only match day six.
Me too.
But comparing Real Madrid and Barcelona, and it's annoying for us to do this because it's a shame that neither of these teams, as you know, exist in a vacuum on their own. They always have to exist with the other. It's the nature, the symbiotic nature of these two clubs, unfortunately, in this unhealthily obsessive relationship they have in Spanish football, right? But the way you see the Real Madrid starting 11 and the players who are missing through long-term injury, take out Courtois and Militao from the team for the whole season, and that's an enormous blow. Vinicius missing the last few games. Modric having a bit part and not necessarily being particularly happy. Danny Carvajal picking up an injury, and that's not how long he's going to be out for. Fran Garcia not overly convincing. All of that compared to Barcelona, and I'm not saying that Barcelona had the most incredible start to the season. What they have done, though, is at the end of the transfer window, they made two world-class signings, and we were sceptical about João Félix. We were publicly sceptical about where
he would
fit in. But he has come in, and okay, it's three games, but he has massively elevated the attacking potential of the side, as has João Cancelo. And we'll get on to Barcelona in just a moment and discuss that. But I just feel that if you things have shifted big time, and it's only six match days, and I don't want to get carried away. Okay, so you're saying definitely. So I feel a bit better about this, that I'm not getting wildly carried away, that the narrative feels like it shifted a bit.
No, absolutely. Because let's go back to something we said actually at the live pod in the summer. I think we said that no one has a starting 11 as good as Real Madrid. At that point, to be honest, we thought there was a chance Mbappe was coming, and we were sort of counting him in it, right? But even without Mbappe, given how well the Bellingham experiment was working, you think that starting 11 is really, really strong. But scratch the surface a little bit, and there's some holes in it. Now, I think they've got lots of good midfielders, and I actually think they could assimilate a couple of injuries in midfield, and they would be all right. But I think fullback positions are important in most teams. I think in a team as narrow as Real Madrid, they're even more important. And I think Danny Carvajal is vital. So without him, you've already got a problem. I personally really like Fran García. Fran García, for me, was the best left-back in Spain by a very long way last year, playing for Rayo Vallecano, but this is a different prospect. For what it's worth, I don't like Mendy as the solution there. I don't think Mendy... I think Nacho is possibly even the best solution. And Nacho's a good player, and there's nothing really wrong with him. I think it's worth pointing out last night, by the way, that both Alaba and Rudiger were dreadful as well. Like, really dreadful. And so you start seeing a couple of holes. Then, as you say, now, I'm absolutely not going to blame Kepa for last night. Absolutely not. None of those goals are his fault. But he doesn't transmit the degree of security and that sense that it'll be all right that Courtois
does. I heard a nice phrase on the radio. No para lo imparable. He doesn't stop the unstoppable shots, which Courtois does. Courtois makes these saves.
Said,
think, how has he done that?
That said, remember the very start of Courtois' career. I remember hearing that exact line about Courtois. I remember actually hearing the word permeable. Courtois is permeable. Like it's not that he's necessarily
the start of his Real Madrid career
as a whole. No, his Real Madrid career. Okay. And remember, he had that Champions League game when he went off, and there was an accusation that it was to do with not being able to take the pressure, and he came out very strongly, and actually I thought very eloquently against that at the time. But anyway, he clearly became that goalkeeper. I don't think Kepa. I think it's the Griezmann header. I think Courtois saves that.
That's what I'm saying.
It's an amazing header. There's nothing wrong with what Kepa does. But I think Courtois saves it. And actually, to be fair to Kepa, he makes a brilliant save. Is it off Saul, I think, at 2-0?
Yes.
Which would have been 3-0. But so there's another little weakness there. And Militao's absence is a little weakness. And you scratch the surface a bit and you think, yeah, there's some holes in this team. I mean, last night, Carlo Ancelotti takes off Fran García and Lucas Vázquez. And he replaces them with Nacho and Mendy, I think.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, look, bottom line is that's two fullbacks replaced by two fullbacks, and those are good changes. But that's a point when you're chasing the game.
At 3-1 down with half an hour left, and he also brought on Tchouaméni as well. That was the three changes that he made.
Exactly. Yeah. And he goes for defensive changes. And I think at that point, that was a recognition of the limitations of what he had on the bench. But it was also, I think, a recognition that actually this could get worse before it gets better. So the first thing we have to do is kind of stem the bleeding here, you know, is to kind of stop this getting worse. And I think that's not a great position to be in. And I'm the same as you. I'm reluctant to go down this road too much because I think it would feel like we're allowing ourselves to be blown away by one result in which, obviously, you know, if a couple of decisions go another way or if they take a couple of their chances, perhaps it changes and perhaps we're talking about something different. But I think we go back to that list. Arribas, Mayoral, Barrenechea, Morata, Strand Larsen. And we think, actually, this was coming. Maybe not quite like this, but some vulnerability was there. And I think the strength in depth probably wasn't there. That said, Vinicius will be back in midweek. And I reckon he'll tear it up.
You reckon? Okay, let's see. Hopefully, because he was supposed to be out for 42 days. And in theory, he's going to be back after 28. So he would have really
that's
slashed
the risk, of course.
Yeah, he really slashed the amount of time he was supposed to be out. So with such an explosive player, fingers crossed it doesn't lead to any problems. We must move on because there are other things for us to discuss. I'm sure you, dear listeners, have questions for us about that Madrid derby. Send them to us and we'll deal them with them on the Q&A pod tomorrow. But Barcelona 3, Celta Vigo 2 was a really quite an extraordinary game. Now, Al has put here in the production notes, Barca weren't very good for 80 minutes. What changed? Now, he was there. He was pitch side. He was watching the game, covering it for ESPN. I wasn't. I was watching it on telly. I didn't feel that. Were Barca not very good for 80 minutes? I mean, they did have chances during those 80 minutes. There are so many chances in this game. It could have finished 9-6, 9-7. It was a really open and entertaining game.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? And that does enable you to kind of reach both conclusions, which is to say, Barcelona were okay-ish, but also to look at it and go, blimey, Celta could have scored 4 or 5 here. And they really could. And Stegen makes a couple of very, very good saves. There's one sort of at his near post when he puts a hand up.
Yes.
And it's the strength of the wrist more than anything else. It's like, hang on, that should hit the hand, push the hand over and go in the net. And it doesn't. I'll tell you what changed. At the risk of being ventajista, just as you were a minute ago.
Yeah.
Rafa Benitez took off Lord Barrington. And you just don't do that. That's part of it. And that genuinely is part of it, by the way, because I think it took some of the fear away from Barcelona. But obviously the fear is also taken away by the fact that you need to go for the game. I think the other thing that changed is that they got the goal. And that created a momentum. And that created a sense that, okay, here we go. There is something here now that we can chase.
I'm just laughing at right. the idea that there are some new listeners to the podcast who have... Did he just say Lord Barrington? Who the bloody hell?
Who's Lord Barrington? Iago our Lord Barry Aspas, yeah.
Correct, yes. Go on.
And you're right. I'm sort of not sure that I see a specific thing.
Mm.
Like a kind of a...
But you're right. I think you're right. They got the goal. They got the goal. And you know, Barcelona and Real Madrid, when they're in this kind of situation, they're trailing and they're at home as well, especially if they get a goal. And even if there's only 9 minutes left, they will always believe they can get something out of this game. Always. Always. It's just the nature of it.
And look at the goal as well. It's a gorgeous pass.
Oh, yeah.
From it's a really, really brilliant pass. And the finish is pretty tasty too, but it goes in off the bar. And you sort of think, imagine if that hits the bar and come out.
Yeah.
Is that finishing 2-0?
Possibly.
I mean, look, ifs and ands again, and we're back in that territory. But the response was really good, and the construction of the three goals was fantastic. The passing on all the pullback from Joao Cancelo for Lewandowski's second was excellent, and the delivery from Gavi, who by the way played really, really well as a pivot, which is an unusual role for him because Gavi is someone who. You feel like you shouldn't tame.
Mm.
You should let him go and chase people down and be in people's faces and lead the press. And yet, if you're saying to him, play at pivot, you're basically saying to him, don't do that thing that you do.
Mm.
Because this whole thing will collapse at that point.
Mm. But yes, in the end, it didn't collapse in Barca with that 3-2 victory. A word on the two Joao's. Joao Felix with a lovely assist. Joao Cancelo with an assist for the second goal. And the winner as well. They've had quite an impact, Sid, since coming. They've only been there 3 games, and Barcelona have scored 13 goals in those 3 games. Remember, this was the Barca team that won 11 games 1-0 last season. This was not a Barca team that was free-flowing and full of goals. And okay, we don't need to attribute the glut of goals just to the arrival of these two players. Obviously not, but it has coincided with them looking particularly dangerous in the final third.
Yeah, and just so as not to labour the point because I've said it before, but I would just briefly mention, I think the significance of a right back playing not necessarily as well as Joao Cancelo, which is obviously very important, but playing that style of game, I think is really important for the structure of this team and how well it all fits together. Joao Felix is really interesting because Xavi has at times, has talked at least like a manager who wants his wide players very wide to make the pitch really, really wide. And now obviously those players then come inside, but the starting point is a wide position which opens the pitch out and then they come into that space and hopefully they've drawn defenders to them and other people can go in inside channels and so on. What he's doing with Joao Felix, I think, suggests something different. You nominally play on the left, but you're sort of playing as a number 10. Not quite, but sort of. So you're off Lewandowski to the left, but you're quite close to him. And I think and it's easy to say this after the assist he gives Lewandowski at the weekend, but it's not just that. It's also the non-assist, because obviously it was officially given to Christensen in the previous game when he lets it run for his legs for Lewandowski to score. There's an awareness there, and I think Lewandowski will really appreciate that. And I think it's not a coincidence that Lewandowski is one of the people most benefiting from this. Mm. I think that that can only work if Balde continues to have the athleticism and also the intelligence, by the way, to make the right runs at the right time, to go on the outside and allow João Félix to play inside. And therefore, you're saying, we're still opening the pitch because we've got our fullback doing that. Now, that requires a degree of protection. And I think the fact that Xavi plays sort of with two pivots in parallel, obviously, Odiol Romeo and Frenkie de Jong, can help with that. Now, with Frenkie likely to be out for, 6 or 7 weeks, I think they reckon, then it'll be interesting to see how they remedy that problem. With the return of Pedri, maybe it doesn't matter enormously, maybe. But I think you're right. Those two's impact has been huge. And quite honestly, yeah, and you know, let's own this. Quite honestly, I'm surprised by how good João Félix has been.
Hmm. Yeah, we did not see this coming necessarily, but it's coming and it's happening. And it's a reality in Barcelona now. Top of the table. The top of the table, they're 1 point clear of Real Madrid. They are level on points with Girona, who we're going to talk about in just a second. Before we move on, a word on Celta, by the way, who must have been absolutely gutted. And the second time this season that they've narrowly lost against one of the big boys because they were beaten 1-0 by Real Madrid with Jude Bellingham scoring late on. 2-0 up with 9 minutes to go and they lose 3-2. A fantastic first goal in his career in La Liga by the division's only Greek player. That was Luvikas. Yes. Fantastically well taken, brilliant. But yeah,
he's got great numbers in the Netherlands. It's really good numbers. So maybe he's going to be a genuine goal scorer.
One to watch. That's us, Luvikas. But yeah, Rafa Benitez must be absolutely gutted.
Yeah. I mean, I was there in San Sebastian as well when they played really well against Real Sociedad in the second half.
Oh yes,
There are things there. There is something starting to happen. I think there's a recognition there. I mean, again, look, the opportunism of pointing at Aspas on the bench is, I think, very attractive. but they will be very, very, very disappointed with how it went. I mean, look, it can happen against Barcelona and Real Madrid because they have a quality of players. And, you know, sometimes we talk, and in particular with Real Madrid, and I think it's understandable, and you know, I fall into this as much as anyone else. I'm not claiming that I've seen this and no one else does. And we do sometimes talk about kind of a mystique around Madrid and maybe a little bit with Barcelona as well, but I think mostly with Madrid. And in fact, actually, after this game, Xavi said, we don't have this in our history. Real Madrid have this. And so it's interesting we have it. I think Xavi overplays the fact they don't have this in history. I've heard him say this before, and I don't actually entirely agree with him. But anyway. And one of the reasons why this happens is because they have bloody good players.
Yes.
And, you know, you give a bloody good players a little bit longer and a little bit longer and a little bit longer. And you know, you've got 70 minutes and they haven't scored. No, okay. But 70 minutes is only 70 of the 90 or 70 of the 100, as it might be now.
Yes.
There's still quite a lot of minutes to score in.
It's true.
And so that's part of it. But I think from Celta's point of view that I don't want to play the cliche card, but let me play it. They will take some positives from this. Mm-hmm. And I think they will look at this and think, we showed that we know what we're doing. And the goal, by the way, that Aspas provides the assist on is brilliant. And it's brilliant from they get the ball in the bottom right corner, in their own corner, play their way out with a three men play kind of two or three little interchanges to get out of the press there. They then get it to Aspas, who delivers a beautifully weighted pass. It looks relatively simple, but I think if you watch it again, the weight on it is just wonderful. And so I think Rafa will be pissed off, no doubt about it. And you know, he's a man who expresses his pissed offness, if that's a real word, quite openly. But I think fundamentally he should be pretty pleased with the way things are going.
They're 18th in the table with just 4 points so far.
Yeah, which isn't
season,
good.
Which isn't
great. It's not good. But I do think there is enough there to think that, you know, this will be all right.
A word on Girona before we go, Sid. They recorded their fifth victory of the season, 5 wins and a draw from their first 6 games. They're the only team unbeaten in La Liga, along with Barcelona. They beat Mallorca 5-3, absolutely dismantled them in the first half. They went 1-0 down, and then they just absolutely battered the Mallorca goal. It was wave after wave after wave of attack. They were 4-1 up at half-time. They scored a fifth at the start of the second half as well, and they completely overwhelmed Mallorca, who in theory are a defensively strong unit. They're playing really attractive football. They've made some really intelligent signings as well. They've shored up a little bit defensively. Last season they conceded a lot of goals. This season they're conceding fewer. And listen, in midweek they travel to Villarreal, okay, not easy. And then they host Real Madrid next weekend at Montilivi, a fixture that last season they won 4-2 with Tati Castellanos scoring four goals. So it's really exciting times for Girona, Sid.
Really exciting, because this doesn't feel... Look, we know it is a one-off in the sense that we know they're not going to finish second. Well, maybe they are. Imagine that. Okay, but we think they're not going to finish second. But we look at this team, and this isn't a team like often happens when a smaller team is quite near the top of the table early in the season. You think, well, you know, they've fluked a few results, or they're very defensively strong and it won't continue like this, or they're very effective in front of goal. This is a team that you look at and you go, no, they're a bloody good football team. Everything they do well, except maybe that little bit of attention late in the games, because it's not the first time it's happened to them. You know, they were 5-1 up and they concede two. It's 89th and 94th, I think, to Abdon Prats, both of them. But then, you know, that's understandable. Mm. If they come through the Villarreal game, the Real Madrid game, with two wins, then I think we start looking at them and saying, OK, this team finishes in the top six.
Yeah, I think they will start looking.
In fact, I'm starting to think that already. I don't want to jump the gun, but they look like a team where all of the pieces fit, where there's a very clear identity, where the identity is positive as well. And I just think there's a stability at club level as well. And again, you don't want to overplay that, because, you know, your players have still got to be good and your coach has still got to be good, and they've been down with this same ownership. They were relegated and came back again. But there is a stability there, and I think there is a clarity there, which...
They finished 10th last season, but they had a chance to finish in a European spot until the penultimate match day. So, there's a chance that they could go one better and claim European football for the first time. Steady. It's only six match days, but they're playing very, very well.
Yes.
Before we go, a quick word of what's going on in the Segunda. At the time of recording, Zaragoza are top on 16 points, and they hadn't even played this weekend. They travel to Racing Ferrol tonight. Leganés are second. They won 3-1 at Mirandés. Espanyol, who are third, travel to Tenerife tonight. Levante beat Eldense, and Oviedo, under new coach Luis Carrión, were beaten 1-0 at home by Real Valladolid, thanks to a stunning 92nd minute winner from Marcos Andrea. This week, we've got midweek La Liga, so on Tuesday it's Sevilla Almeria and Mallorca Barcelona. Then on Wednesday it's Athletic Club against Getafe, Villarreal Girona, Real Madrid Las Palmas, Cadiz Rayo and Valencia Real Sociedad. And then on Thursday it's Granada against Betis, Celta Alaves and Osasuna Atleti. Lots for us to talk about over at Patreon for the rest of the week, so make sure you come and join us, patreon.com/TSFP. And if you don't, it's fine. We'll be back here every Monday, as we always are. Adios.
Cheerio.